You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show.
And welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Sebastian Söderberg wins his maiden European Tour title after a five-man playoff at the Omega European Masters.
It hasn't really sunk in yet. I feel like I was pressing down my emotions all day just to try and focus. I dreamt of winning on the European Tour and even better doing it this way when it was in the lead, lost it, and then take it away in a playoff.
The Swede joins us on the show and we'll also hear from joint runner-up Rory McIlroy. And then we've a preview of the next event on the Race to Dubai, the Porsche European Open in Germany. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and alongside me today, John E. Morgan, a former golfer on the European Tour, as well as golf commentator Richard Kaufman. Chaps, I can't quite decide when I look back at the European Masters whether it was one of the best events on the European Tour this season, with so much drama, so many players had opportunities to win, or whether you look at the elite players at McIlroy and Fleetwood and think, how on earth did they not win? Surely it was a gimme for them at one stage or another over the course of the last couple of rounds. What did we make of the action in Switzerland?
Me personally, Dan, it is the best tournament. I love being up in those mountains. The players love it. They absolutely enjoy just the scenery, the way they get treated, the golf course, the setup, the fan base. The weather's always playing ball as well. And it's unpredictable, comes off the mountains, as we all know. But yeah, mate, it's unbelievable. I mean, the name's rocking up playing that. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, whether it was the best
or the worst.
But no, it definitely wasn't the worst.
Never is the worst, mate. It's awesome place.
We're talking about the event as in the way it panned out in terms of scenery. Like you, John, I've been there many times, although I don't think you're allowed to do the barbecue anymore. Remember the TV crew used to have the barbecue?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember, wasn't there a fire or something, or too much noise?
Someone kicked off, yeah. They had to chuck it in a lake somewhere. Yes.
Is that why you can't do it anymore, because of that?
Something like that, yeah. It wasn't a year that I was there anyway. But it was, you know, you have this, you stay in the town itself, and it's one of those towns where everything's close by and you walk down through the village to the golf course. And also, if you're part of the media crew as well, and I've been there not as a TV commentator, but part of a radio crew as well going there. Well, I don't know if that's the case anymore as well. There's a golf course on the other side of the road.
Jack Nicklaus, 9-hole golf course. Unbelievable.
So we get used to, like, on a Saturday morning, used to have a media competition as well. Go and play over there as well. I mean, the time of year as well. So it's not boiling hot, but it's that crisp, lovely. The air is just so clean, and the views are just, as you've probably, if you watch the TV pictures, so breathtaking. So from that point of view, yeah, no, it's great. Just talking about, you know, I love tournaments where the expected doesn't happen necessarily. And I just, you know, there's one point where I was watching yesterday, I think it was something like 29 players or something like that were within three shots of the lead. Yeah, and any one of those could emerge. I don't think, if you'd have asked 1,000 people that turned up at Crans-Montana on Sunday morning, pick me a winner from the leaderboard, you know, from the top 20 of the leaderboard, I don't think anyone would have mentioned the name Sebastian Söderberg.
Well, the interesting thing, the European Tour Twitter feed always puts out, going into the final round, who do you think's going to win? And they listed McIlroy, they listed Fleetwood, they listed Gavin Green. They did not list Söderberg. He was not too far off the pace, because players have come from off the pace to win previously, but you're right, he was one name that just didn't spring to mind.
Listen, I know we're going to maybe hopefully chat to him later, but I just wonder whether Sebastian Söderberg's mother would have even picked him at the start of the day.
Well, probably not, mate. But I tell you what, he's one of those guys. I've seen him on the range over the last couple of years, because he's been on and off Challenge Tour, European Tour and stuff like that. But he's one of those guys, when you stumble across him on the range, he's got that different kind of sound when he strikes the ball. He's a muncher. He rips it out there. He averages over 300 yards with the driver, and he's an absolute flusher of a golf ball. And wow, that putter, my goodness, was that working a dream on the back nine early doors?
Yeah, birdies at 10, 11, 12, 13 and 14. He started the round four shots off the pace. He bogeys the first, so he slips further back into a fairly sizable chasing pack that we know. Just dial it back the previous few days, though. Rory McIlroy gets in a fantastic position on Friday. He's the favourite going into the weekend. He's the best player in the field. He's nearly the best player in the world. He's coming off the back of one of his biggest wins, certainly in terms of financial, the biggest win.
Yeah, how is he going to get over the playoff defeat?
But do you know what I mean? Surely you think from here on in, well, it's going to be a cakewalk for him. But did he just run out of gas, do you think, over the weekend?
I think he did run out of gas, me personally.
Having said that, he's come back and made the playoffs, so he can't run out of the gas. What am I talking about? I don't know.
Well, no, he came back and got into the playoff, but that was thanks to Soderberg missing, you know, 3-putting from 6 foot on 17. But, I mean, there was many chances coming down that stretch, but I seen the pivotal moment on 14 on Saturday when he's bombed that drive 4-15 straight down the middle, going in there with just a flick of a wedge. Okay, it was a tight pin on the right-hand side, and he's leaked it. He was fighting that right-hand side. He wasn't clearing himself out of the way at all, able to square the club face up. And that's a sign of tiredness.
Was he doing that all week?
He was doing that a lot, yeah. Most of his misses were down the right-hand side. And that's a result in leaning into the ball, getting trapped behind it, and then it's only going one place, and that's to the right. I mean, yeah, fatigue was massive.
Interesting, because we got to see, as you'd expect, being the world number two, you know, probably the most famous, or at least one of the most famous golfers in the world right now, up there with Tiger Woods. We saw every single shot of Rory McIlroy. So you kind of watch him and you know exactly what, you know, you mentioned the 14th on Saturday. What, 415-yard drive?
It's insane. Yeah. I mean, it's 10%
difference.
You can
see that on the European Tour's Twitter feed. They've just put it out there. So many views on that. It's insane.
So 415-yard drive. But, let's take another player, which probably won't get too many mentions when they report what happened in the final round on Sunday at the Omega European Masters. Thomas Peters. Every time I looked up, Thomas Peters had a putt of less than 10 feet on every single hole. And he kept missing them. You know, I don't know how many, what was it, leaderboard? How many did Thomas Peters miss out by? But I don't think it was that many.
No,
he's another one that should have won it. Tommy Fleetwood.
Three by the end. Shot a 65 on the last day.
But it should have been touching 60, something like that, the way he was. When he won a couple of weeks ago, the way he's striking the ball is.
Well, it was unbelievable. And I actually said to Adam, his caddy, I said, where's it been missing? He said, we've just been waiting for that putter to get hot. He said, it's the only thing that has not been hot.
But it wasn't hot on Sunday.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it would have been, I think, potentially for Thomas Peters, another win.
You're talking about two players, McIlroy, Peters, who can rip the ball, can drive it well, can drive it long. Gavin Green as well was another up in the vanguard this week. People told me coming into this event that it's not going to be a driver's course.
No.
Is it? Has it changed? I know the course has changed a little bit, John.
Well, the thing is, if you look at that, say, the top 10, you know, Wayne Dorensby, amazing short game, right? So, you know, he's right up there, and my goodness, what he done on 15, blocking it right into the trees. That's not even in play. I mean, he came spinning straight out of that. I mean, it was nearly a shank with a driver. And I know Wayne, he'll probably laugh his butt off at this, but, you know, it was out there, and he ends up making double.
Yeah,
that is a massive score on that hole up the hill, and that is one that you do think you're going to give yourself an eagle chance for, just like the previous one, 14. But you got some great short gamers, Andres Romero, I mean, Soderberg, I mean, crikey, I mean, he held everything. So
the point is, you got a mix. You mentioned Ormsby, you know, you got players like Samoya, Schwab, who you wouldn't put out there as the longest hitters, but then you got Arnaus and McIlroy and Lucas Herbert and Thomas Peters. All these guys obviously are what you call amongst the purest ball strikers. So it's a great mix. And, you know, it can be a fiddly golf course. There are holes where you have the odd drivable par fours, reachable par fives, where, you know, the length does come into it. I mean, you know, Rory hitting wedges into par fives. Oh,
but over the last 3-4 years, it's been Scott Henn knocking on the door for a win there, you know, getting done right at the last hurdle. And he's a monster hitter off the tee. So it says it's a bit of a mix and match. I mean, which one do you take? Do you take the bigger hit? I mean, a lot of people had their money on Gavin Green this week, and that guy hits it a country mile. I mean, the ball doesn't come down, especially up there. But, I mean, he's got the short game as well to boot. But there's some other guys out there that are nice little plodders, but they can get up and down out of anything.
I think what fascinates me as well, just the makeup of the course, because all the tough holes, seemingly at least, come very early on.
Yeah,
and the way
yeah.
that the leaderboard changes, you get players that have got through the first four holes in particular, maybe got to those drivable par fours. They've made a few shots up. The leaders that go out later have maybe dropped the odd shot. So it gets a little bit congested. You start to think, crikey, he's involved. There's so many more players that get thrown in. And then you get the back nine where everyone seems to score well. But it's a very changeable leaderboard in terms of the names and how they get there. Have they got it right? Should it be the other way round? Do you like the fact that the hard holes come first?
The thing is about the first four holes, I will say, are probably the hardest first four holes we'll see on the European Tour, because you got well over 500 yards the first, and it plays downhill as well.
That used to be a par five, didn't it?
It did, but they've drawn it into a par four now, and it is a monster. I mean, the boys are hitting 4-iron into that, you know, and that's very rare for this modern day age, that they're hitting second shots 4-irons to a par four. Then you got uphill, par four as well, tight as you like. I mean, every hole is really tight to begin with. Then the par three afterwards, you know, tight little green, smallest green, right in the distance, loads of fall-offs, really hard green to read as well. And then you come to four, which to me, probably played second or third, probably hardest on the golf course. And you've got to fade it. You've got that big bunker on the left and you've got to fade it and then fade it towards, really, if you're a right-hander, towards the out-of-bounds. And that's a really daunting shot. But then you get your moment. 5, 6, 7, you can get on a massive birdie charge.
And then you know, come to the end and 18.
Oh.
I mean, that tee shot, John, I mean, how hard is it to hit the fairway?
That'd be all right for me. I sling the crap out of it from right to left. So I think I just aim it straight at that bunker and just put my normal swing on it. But what a hole. I mean, it definitely suits the low drill. I mean, Söderberg played it amazing. I mean, he got that 5-wood out or 3-wood and he just flew that big ridge that just, if you land just on that, it will kick straight down towards the trees and towards Seve's plaque, you know, and maybe go down behind the wall where we've seen Rory. It's one of those, if you can carry it, you are mustard.
Rory didn't play the 18th as Seve did. He was nearly in the same place, though, wasn't he? But he obviously didn't hole out as Seve did all those years ago.
No, he didn't. But they put a net in up there.
Enough.
Yeah, oh, close enough. But you wanted to take it on. If you heard the man on the mic there, it was like he was wanting, he said to the ref, I want to go that way. But what's that net doing there? He said, well, that's guarding the swimming pool. Fair enough. He said, fair enough. But he said, if that wasn't there, he was going to have a pop at it. We were going to see another Seve shot.
How difficult is the shot? Because you were there a couple of years ago, weren't you, trying to reenact that?
Yeah, well, my first attempt, I was down there with Billy Foster. He was talking me all through it. My first attempt hit the wall and nearly came back and knocked me out. Then the next four attempts, I cleared it and got it just shy of the green. So it can be done. It can be done.
We should point out Billy Foster was caddying for Seve.
He was.
When he did it, so that's why he was talking me through the shot.
And he thought Seve's cheese had finally fallen off his cracker when he took that shot on, I tell you.
Let's get back to the eventual winner. Well, we've got to get back to the playoff, I guess, really. Rory, brilliant to get into the playoff. Five-man playoff. I can't remember the last. I was trying to look at the stats. Last five-man playoff is probably out there somewhere.
Mm.
But it's a hugely different dynamic. Playoffs are usually two, sometimes three, occasionally four. I remember one in Los Angeles that I think Robert Allenby might have won. It might have been six or even seven a few years ago. But What sort of different dynamic is it when you've got five players in a playoff?
Congested.
You know, you're not. Yeah. But you're not. You know, I think playoffs, it's match play. You're playing the man. But can you? I don't know.
Well, listen, you
got to stick to your own game.
That's right.
You have to.
You have to focus on yourself, don't you?
You do.
It's difficult, I suppose, to not be distracted by what else is going on around you. For example, you know, spectators getting hit, which was the case.
Yeah.
You know, and things like that that were going on. But expect the unexpected when you're in a playoff, John.
Yeah, obviously, I've been in a few playoffs.
You've been in a playoff on the PGA Tour.
Most of the stuff I've done is through playoffs. And I tell you what, wears you down, I tell you. It's very mentally disturbing sometimes because you bang your head against a brick wall. You can really put your best foot forward. It's some great shots and it don't come off. But you've got to stick to your own game. You do not go down the path of your opponent. I know it's a bit of a match play situation, but when it's five of you, it ain't.
He said he was more relaxed going into the playoff than he was in the final round itself, Sebastian Söderberg. Obviously, he bogeyed 17, three-putted 17. He was first to post the score. Does that make a bit of difference? Because at that stage, I think, yes, there were players that could get to 15 under, but it looked odds on a playoff. Can he get in the mindset a bit quicker than everyone else, maybe? I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's a good question.
It's a weird one. You're hanging around, does it make it worse? I mean, obviously for him, it wasn't everyone's different.
Yeah, it wasn't like he finished it an hour or more before.
No, he's only 20 minutes ahead.
Yeah, everyone kind of was finishing at the same time. He's signing his card, he's watching them come in. The reason why he was, more relaxed, and it's the same story for Carlos Samoya as well, is that they knew even if they didn't win, that their playing rights for next season were secure by finishing in a share of second place. So, I mean, that's the reason why it felt like there was nothing to lose. Obviously, those guys, you want to win your first European Tour event, but to know you've tied things up for next year.
When you've got your win in sight, you want the win. It'd be nothing else on your mind. I mean, 2-year exemption now for Söderberg. I mean, that's him done for the rest of the year and next year now. So, you know, that's a massive weight off your shoulders. And I tell you what, we're going to see the best of him now. I mean, that's a massive confidence booster for that man.
Because you look at his record on the European Tour, and Dan, I don't know if you have looked at it, but it's not great. He's had one previous season on the European Tour. He finished 165th on the race to Dubai. Mm. This year, before Sweden, he'd only made 7 cuts all year, so 13 missed cuts in 20 events. He was again around the 150 mark on the race to Dubai. Then we'll get to speak to him. So I don't know what clicked. Obviously, in Sweden, on home soil in Gothenburg, you know, he was amongst the contenders, finished fifth there, bang. Next week, he goes and wins, and suddenly he's jumped from almost 150 into the top 50 on the Race to Dubai. Now, you know, he's heading off to potentially to the Tour Championship at the end of the year.
Oh, no question.
And now he's a winner from, like,
I know
he's won on the Challenge Tour, but I mean, this is a
huge. But Rich, confidence is massive. That can propel you to, you know, the world's best. It can, just confidence alone. I mean, that man is standing on the range looking as good as all of them. He gets on the golf course. Okay, he dominated the golf course. That isn't an easy golf course to be able to throw darts at, you know what I mean, and be kind of all in and hitting absolute monsters and gunning them dead straight, all in loads of putts. They are hard greens. I mean, he's won right now. He can win a lot of other places. I mean, there's so much talent there. Rory, Fleetwood, I mean, list goes on. Garcia, I mean, they're all in good form as well. So it's like, you know, he's taking them out.
Just a quick word on the other two players that we haven't mentioned that made the playoff. Andrés Romero started the day in top spot. He bogeyed three of the first five holes. A bit like Rory, he did brilliantly to battle back. There is more of a backstory with Andrés Romero than there is of one or two of the others that made the playoff, because we know what a fantastic player he's been in the past. He struggled to sort of get back to those sites. It would have been a massive win for him, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would have. But what a beautiful player Andrés Romero is. I've played with him, and he's a special talent. And one definitely not fulfilled his mass potential, I think. Someone that's just fallen off the radar over the last couple of years, and I don't know where he's been, where his head's been, or, you know, kind of the game has been fluctuating. But, I mean, he's well down the list of, you know, world rankings and everything like that. And it's just nice to see him come back, because I remember playing with him and I just thought, wow, you are special. I remember playing with Angel Cabrera for the first time when I had my US Tour card, and I was like, wow, who are you? And then, you know, bang, he wins a major, wins a couple of Masters.
Andrés,
thank you very much.
Andrés nearly won a major, didn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's what I mean. But he never pressed on after that. That was all.
And Lorenzo Gaye started with a double bogey, finished with three birdies in the final four. He was the first player, unfortunately, I think, to bow out of the playoff, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. After hitting that lovely lady on the left-hand side, you know, he followed Rory. He seen Rory, you know, he was fourth off the tee. Gagli was fifth off the tee, and he followed Rory down the left and hit it a bit shorter than Rory, and unfortunately hit her on the head. And luckily, she was all right. She was up and smiling by the end of it, but it was a big delay before he ended up hitting a shot, and he had a bad lie in the rough as well. Hit it fat, straight in the drink.
Three players, obviously, with putts, I say to win, it wasn't to win at the time, because Soderberg, he took the first of the three. Samoya was closer, and McIlroy was closest of all. Is there less pressure going first, or it's a playoff, it's your first European Tour, potential first European Tour win, the pressure's there anyway?
Well, I want the first putt. I mean, if it goes in, then you've asked the question.
Yeah.
You've asked the question. I mean, Rory drew first blood. He put the ball in closer first, and then they all followed in, right? And he hit great shots. Fair play. And everyone thought, oh, this is Rory. This is happening. You know, he's going to be wearing a red jacket.
I mean, Soderberg was the best tee shot by a stretch, wasn't he?
Oh, by miles, just like he did in his, you know, 72nd hole. But, I mean, to have the first putt and drain it, you just look round and they just know you've done your deed. And that is it. They know you're going back down that tee or you're the winner regardless now. And it's, the pressure, the heat was on, and they both missed it.
Incredible, really, that we only got one of the three. I mean, I don't know what the stats are from that sort of range, but you would have thought at least two of the three. I mean, we've got a five-man playoff and it ends in the first hole.
Yeah. I mean,
rubbish.
Well, listen, there's a lot of flights to be caught as well from the from everybody, you know, from the European Tour staff and the TV crew and the players and everything. So I think there would have been a bit of relief amongst everyone. But yeah, it's one of those that you thought might go on for an hour or more, but you know, Sebastian Soderberg, again, I don't know. Obviously, Rory would have been big favourite going into the playoff. But, you know, Galli, Samoya and Soderberg, you know, these are three players that will, in the last few weeks, have been way outside the top 100 on the Race to Dubai. Romero, we mentioned, is a player who's been struggling as well, obviously mainly being based out in America. So he had four guys who weren't really expected to be there. One you really expected to be there. Kind of, you would say the pressure's on Rory, but then you think, there was 2008 and there was the world number one scenario. So Rory said that, you know, one of his goals now the rest of the year is to get back to world number one. Of course, this was an event that maybe should have been his European Tour breakthrough when he
slipped. Final.
Does anyone remember who he lost to in the playoffs 2008? Go on.
Raphael Jacquelin.
It was another Frenchman, wasn't it?
No, not Raphael Jacquelin. It was, he beat me. He's going to kill me for forgetting this.
Should I whisper it to you?
Yeah, do it.
Oh, Jean-François Lecan.
That's the one.
Yeah, mate, sorry, Jean.
Have you banished the memory of that defeat, obviously?
It was 2002. He won the Challenge Tour, and, I was close behind him.
So, I mean, listen, this is a born champion. Yeah. This is a guy that wants to win everything, and I think particularly given what happened 11 years earlier, one that he really would like to have got. But I think he'll sleep easy over the next week.
He looked very different looking back at those pictures, didn't he? Rory looked very young. Obviously, he was very young, but he just looked, you know.
Oh, mate, he looked proper dapper. I'm just jealous of that lovely curly hair. Yeah.
Well, didn't you know Rory around that sort of time quite? Because didn't you work at Hollywood Golf Club, John?
Yeah, good mates with the head pro there, Steve Crooks, and his best mate Ricky McCormick works in the shop.
So you knew the young Rory, didn't you?
Yeah, well, not really, but I think there was kind of a bit like, oh, do you know John? And, you know, it was like mates of mates and never really crossed, but then met him on his first, I think, where were we? Valencia, I think it was, first tournament out, and first time I seen him, and I went out and watched a couple of holes just to see what the hype was all about, and yeah, it was pretty good.
What is it with this event when it comes to playoffs, 6 of the last 7 renewals?
Yeah.
Is it just an outlier?
I think that's...
Or is it one of these events that, you know...
I think that's the golf course. That is it in general. I don't think it's one of those that you can ever run away with, because the greens, the way Seve designed them, he put them all as runoffs and little grooves on the edges of the greens. They're so difficult. It's inevitable you're going to miss greens, but you've got to be a great chipper and putter. Like I said, you think the champ would come from the best chipper and putter, but not nine times out of ten, it's been the long ones.
Social media reaction. Sebastian Söderberg on Instagram has said words... Can't describe what I'm feeling right now. Thank you, everyone. Lorenzo Gay said, it's always a pleasure playing with Rory McIlroy. Outstanding player and gentleman both on and off the course. Congrats to Sebastian for your first win. And big thanks to Omega European Masters for such a great tournament.
Can I just say, Dan, you know, we mentioned that, you know, who saw Söderberg winning it. But, I mean, Sebastian maybe can tell us better. But I think you say his name, Söderberg.
Söderberg.
Which means South Mountain. So
it does mean South Mountain.
It's good knowledge.
In the mountains.
It's good knowledge.
It's good knowledge.
It was meant to be.
It was written in the stars.
Or in the mountains.
In the mountains. It's written in the mountains.
Calle Samoa, have I got that one right?
Yeah, I think so.
That'll do. Said, what a week it was at Omega European Masters. Lost in a playoff, so no cigar yet, but maybe next time. Congrats, Sebastian, for the maiden win. And Tommy Fleetwood also thanking the sponsors for a great week in Switzerland.
Yeah, you think Calle Samoa would have a good finish.
Bye, thank you.
Oh, my God.
It's relentless. Early on a Monday morning.
See what we got to put up
with?
Yeah,
I know.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm pleased to say that Sebastian joins us now on the Race to Dubai show to talk about his win up in the mountains in Switzerland. Sebastian, congratulations. A first European Tour success off the back of wins on the Challenge Tour and, of course, the Alps Tour prior to that. This has been a fantastic and steady rise, but your form wasn't particularly great over the course of the summer. Glimpses of it in Sweden, but you got the job done in Switzerland. How proud are you of your performance this past week?
I still can't believe it. It's just the most amazing feeling. I mean, all year I've been kind of just, you know, struggling, and the mindset was keep my name inside the top 110 and keep my card for next year. So this kind of changes things. So it's just an unbelievable experience.
Sebastian, going back to yesterday, as you say, it's still sinking in. And congratulations to you as well from me. When did you start? Because there's so many names up there. And I heard you say afterwards that you weren't exactly sure where you were. So was there ever a feeling that you were in with a chance of winning? And when did that hit you?
Well, when I made the long putt on 13 to go to 14 under, I mean, I knew I was kind of feeling that I was up there. I didn't check a leaderboard all day, but, you know, you can just kind of sense it. From there on, I just told myself to try and stay focused and make a few more birdies. I figured maybe 16 would have a good chance. Well, I mean, when I walked off 18, that's when I saw, all right, well, there's still a chance. I mean, going into the playoff, that's kind of when I calmed down a little bit. The last few holes was kind of shaky, and in the playoff, I felt like I had nothing to lose.
Yeah, I'll come back to that point in a moment. Just this thing of not looking at the leaderboard, not knowing where you are. I know you're not the first or the last golfer that's done that. For someone who's a commentator as opposed to a professional player, I find that hard to imagine that you wouldn't want to know, you wouldn't be tempted to see, and whether that would maybe tactically change things. Obviously, it worked well for you. So is that something you always do?
No, I'd say like when I played on Challenge Tour, I'd have a better look at the leaderboards going into the last few holes. But no, I felt the pressure was so big and I worked so hard to just stay in the moment. And I knew if I even got curious to look at the leaderboard, I didn't want to risk losing my focus. And I didn't feel like it would alter my game plan those last few holes. I mean, both 17 and 18 are decent birdie opportunities if you get the ball in play. And I was fighting so hard to stay focused. It was tough not to look at the leaderboard, but I'm happy I didn't.
You bogeyed 17. You said that you knew you were in contention with that birdie streak from the turn. And you alluded to the fact that you thought it still might be enough 14 for a playoff. So that bogey on 17, you didn't think it was a catastrophe at the time. You didn't think, crikey, now I'm going to get past.
I felt I was just so much in the moment, so I kind of just forgot about that right away. But I mean, when both Rory and Lorenzo made their birdie putts, you know, I could feel that was big. And to be honest, I mean, I was shaking on that first putt, and I just kind of hit a little too firm. And then, pretty much the same on the second putt. But I was happy that I gave myself a good birdie opportunity on 18, and I was shaking at that putt as well. But I gave it a good run, and I actually thought I had it.
You said you were calmer after 72 holes. Am I right? So your brother phoned you up and told you the situation regarding your card, and that was all wrapped up. Is that what you meant by when you were feeling calmer about things?
We were standing on the putter green afterwards, and yeah, he told me, yeah, your card is done. And for me, who've been kind of struggling all year, you know, that was the first step. So that just kind of took all the pressure away. And I just felt like, well, playoffs, I have absolutely nothing to lose. So, I mean, I honestly felt extremely calm that the first playoff hole compared to the last few holes of the fourth round.
Can I ask you, Rory McIlroy, the name, the person, you know, before obviously beating him in a playoff, which I'm sure you would like to hear people say time and again, before you beat him in a playoff, what did he mean to you, Rory McIlroy? I mean, you're a guy who's played, you know, top-level collegiate golf. You've been on the European Tour. But does he have an aura for you?
I mean, yeah, in my book, Rory is the closest thing there is to Tiger. I mean, wherever he goes, he just has that presence about him, and it's just unbelievable. And, you know, I had to focus so hard on sticking to my game plan and my golf that fourth round because I knew I was going to be, you know, tempted. I mean, we didn't talk really the whole round. And, I mean, if you would have asked me before, I would have wanted to just chat him up the whole round, but it took a lot of energy to just stay focused and just play my golf and not look too much on what he was doing, which I really wanted to do. But he's so big for golf, and I'm a huge fan of his, so it's just I couldn't script this any better the way it turned out.
Absolutely. Did he say anything to you afterwards?
I mean, it's all kind of a blur what happened there in the playoffs. He looked genuinely happy for me when he told me congrats after, and but honestly, I don't really recall it. Small blackout.
You say the playoffs are a bit of a blur. I was going to ask you to talk us through it because you rip your drive down the middle. Everybody else was either left or right. And then you putted first of the trio that had the opportunity to sink the birdie. I mean, can you remember the drive? Can you remember the putt? Was it better for you to play first, even though the other guys were just that little bit closer on the green?
You know, I remember everything extremely well up until, you know, Cullen missed his putt, and I just couldn't believe what just happened. I mean, I didn't hit I kind of half popped my 3-wood up, but it went straight. So I think my 3-wood 20 minutes before went about 60, 70 yards further. But then it was just, I felt calm over the wedge and just it had a perfect number in. And on the putt, you know, I felt like I saw the line and I just hit it with as much confidence as I could. And obviously it was huge putting first and putting that pressure on. But I mean, looking at Rory and Carla having putts, you know, the whole time I was just thinking, you know, okay, good, I've survived another playoff hole. So when that moment came and it was only me who made birdie, I mean, it was just for a few seconds there, I'm pretty sure I blacked out completely.
Can't blame you. I mean, it's life changing, isn't it, really, Sebastian? I mean, given where you were a couple of weeks ago, you know, going into the Scandinavian Invitation, and you know, you're from Gothenburg, in your home city. What's clicked? What's changed in the last 2 weeks to go from someone who's been, you know, as you say, struggling to keep your card to now being a European Tour winner?
Well, I've made some key technical changes. I mean, I've been hitting the ball better these last 5-6 weeks than I probably ever have. And I went into check after 3 or 4 weeks off, and I really thought that I played much better than my score. I mean, I think I shot 2 or 3 over and missed the cut by a lot. But I honestly just felt like, man, this was really close. And then I came to Sweden, and I bought a TrackMan, really started focusing on my numbers, trying to, do the technical things, but really focus on how far I'm actually hitting the ball. And, I've been working on that every single day since, and I think I've better control of my ball striking than ever. And it's just that last round in Sweden was just so big. I mean, because I've struggled with shooting low rounds all year, and I mean, I don't know, after that, golf just seemed a little bit easier. You know, the birdies just came a little easier and the bogeys were a little less. Tough to explain.
63 on the final day, of course, in Sweden. 64 on the opening day in Switzerland. And a fantastic win. What is next? We thought that potentially you were down to play in Germany this week. Have you decided not to play in Germany? Were you down to play? What's your immediate plans?
Well, yeah, the plan was to play Germany and Amsterdam because I wasn't into Wentworth. But now I'm into Wentworth. So I'm taking this week off because otherwise I'll have to play 8 or 9 weeks in a row. So I think I'd struggle to play this week anyway. I mean, it would be pointless for me to play, really. I'd probably miss the cut by 10. So yeah, I just need to, come down a little bit and enjoy this win with my family and friends at home. And then come back, recharge for Amsterdam, and then play Wentworth and Alfred Dunhill.
Yeah, so you say you can enjoy it with your family and friends. Is there a party planned already, or are you not in charge of such matters?
There's probably going to be more than one party.
Oh, really? Has it already started for you?
I mean, yeah, we got a sneak start yesterday, me and my brother and a few of the Swedish guys. I don't know what else to do. I mean, this is just, I've never had a bigger reason to just enjoy myself. And so I'm going to take this opportunity and have a few good nights.
Well, you're trending in the right direction. We really enjoyed watching you in Switzerland. Hopefully, it's the first of many on the European Tour. Congratulations once again. We will wish you well for the remainder of the season. Sebastian, thanks for joining us on the Race to Dubai show.
Many thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Amazing, isn't he? He admits that he's so nervous because golfers like to stay in the moment. But he said he was shaking and then he got calmer and then it all seemed to work out for him. And he seems a well-rounded guy and... You know, the fact that he went to college in the States and he's moved around a bit as a youngster, as you were talking to him about, just proves that, this is a guy I think can cope with the rigours and the pressures of playing on the European Tour at the highest level.
Yeah, we don't know, but now he's at Wentworth. Yeah. He's going to be playing Rolex Series events. You know, there's a very good chance now he's in the top 50 that he's going to make it all the way through to Dubai. Interesting, he said he would have missed the cut by miles. some players like to, if they get, he finished fifth in Sweden, he's won here.
Ride the way.
But listen, he knows better than... Listen, there's a few parties around the corner, yeah. I think, so don't blame him.
Don't worry about that. Well, 2 wins on the Challenge Tour, as we knew. 120th in the Race to Dubai rankings coming into the week. He moves up to 47th. And victory for Söderberg, incidentally, comes in his 50th European Tour event. Well, we can hear from the joint runner-up next, Rory McIlroy, to see what he made of his final round in Switzerland.
It's too many mistakes. I think I made like 13 bogeys during the week. I made enough birdies, but I didn't quite have it over the weekend. I obviously made a great run there on the back nine today. Hit two good shots, or one good shot into 18 there, and I just, the putt lacked a bit of speed. I felt like I started on the right line. I just didn't hit it with the pace that I wanted. But, it's been another solid week coming back across the Atlantic, and looking forward to a couple of weeks off. This is my 7th event in 8 weeks. I've played a lot of golf. Yeah, and I think just playing that much, sometimes those little mental errors creep in here and there, and, the sloppy finish yesterday, probably cost me. But, I fought back today and did my best, and just wasn't meant to be.
We've alluded to it already. I mean, Rory tired after his exertions at Eastlake, obviously wanted to win, nearly did win. I guess only a player like him, given the start that he had on Sunday, could have come back to even give himself a chance. I mean, he played brilliantly after being out with a washing at the turn.
Yeah, I mean, Rory, he was hanging his clothes out to dry for a little bit. He was knackered. But the talent that man possesses is streaks ahead of a lot of that field, by miles, and especially in that playoff scenario, he was streaks ahead in world rankings. I mean, look, if you add up all the rest of them compared to him, my goodness, he's so far ahead, it's ridiculous. And yeah, okay, the odds were massively against him, but fatigue is there, and it's a tee shot. I don't know if it... I thought it was a tee shot, especially 18, that was going to suit him, but every time he seemed to find a rough or put himself in a sticky situation. So, yeah, it's a tough one for him.
2019, it won't be remembered for the playoff defeat at the Omega European Masters for Rory McIlroy. It'll be remembered for, you know, he's gone majorless again in the year, and the fact that he, you know, he won the Tour Championship in America again as well. This is a guy who's...
I see him coming back, though, to play it again. I do, because I think he wants it. I think he wants that.
Oh, no, he will. And it,
it'll be an itch he needs to scratch, maybe, at some stage.
It's happened to him twice now. Well, it's every time.
But the way the schedule is as well now, with the American season finishing, he can maybe fit it in.
I'm glad you brought that up, because we wondered how the year would pan out, and I think we're seeing something now in the year, which I know we're going to probably maybe allude to it when we look at the field for the Porsche European Open that's coming up, and then you look at the field that's coming up as well for Wentworth, and suddenly what you're seeing is a real benefit for the European Tour. In fact, the fields are going to be stronger. I mean, in Crans-Montana, you had Rory, you know, Sergio Garcia, Tommy Fleetwood, you know, Wentworth, we've got Tony Finau, Billy Horschel, Patrick Reed's playing this week, Matt Kuchar, Xander Schauffele. So we're seeing an actual strengthening for the European Tour in the second half of
the
year.
It's strange, isn't it? Because initially you think, oh, Wentworth's been bumped. Everything's being done around the PGA Tour, which is still true, obviously. But the way that it's worked out, we are seeing some marquee American names coming to play here. And not only that, I mean, we even had Stenson playing in Sweden, and maybe in another year he might have not been able to play. I mean,
and Casey's playing, coming up, you know.
It can sort of work in our favour, hopefully.
I didn't actually see this happening. And
no, I didn't.
Now it's actually...
I thought they might take
come
more of a break.
It's like, I can't believe how strong our end of our season's going to be on the European Tour. And you can see it's all been a bit of a mix and match of how we work the schedule, but it's really working out, like you said, Richard, bang on, it's working out to our advantage. European Tour, they're getting the good players in now.
Yeah, because it's not... I mean, I mentioned those American names because traditionally they haven't come across, but it also means that all the top European stars as well will be in those fields too. So maybe the European Tour loses out a little bit in the first half of the year, but then that means there's the opportunity for players to make their mark. Someone like an Adrianos, who we've seen.
Wow, what a player.
You know, go on then. Just a question for you two. I know I'm supposed to not be in that chair, but who wins Rookie of the Year right now? Is it Bob McIntyre or Adrianos?
Oh, no. That's a horrible one.
Because neither of them have won.
Neither of them have won. That's
well,
the thing,
I like
it?
Bobber, and I watched him at the Made in Denmark. I mean, what a player. Lefty, gutsy, wants it. Arnaus, exactly the same kind of go-get him attitude. I mean, flick of a coin for me between them. I don't want to pick one.
Yeah. Was he top 10 in the Open, wasn't he?
Yeah, McIntyre, yeah. So maybe that
I think
of...
that just...
I tell you what, I'll go Tails Arnaus.
But yeah. Listen, I know I mentioned it 2 weeks ago when I did the Race to Dubai podcast, but at the start of the year, we were asked for one to watch, and I picked out Adrianos, and I've already said he will win Rookie of the Year because he won the Alps Tour Championship, the end of 2017. Yeah. He won the Challenge Tour Tour Championship at the end of 2018.
He's got the medals.
And I'm predicting that he's going to win the Tour Championship in Dubai.
Really?
In November to sew up the Rookie of the Year.
Did he win an Oman? Was it last year he won in Oman?
So he's going for
the
treble.
Voodoo magic.
He's going for the treble.
Just one last one on Rory. You said it's going to be remembered as a year, and he probably is because it's Rory that he didn't win a major, but he won the Players, he won the Canadian, he won the Tour, he's won 50 million. All of the metrics on the PGA Tour, all the strokes gain stats, everything that you look at says he's the best player in the world. He's had one of the best seasons statistically that there's ever been.
He missed the cut at the Open in Northern Ireland.
No, I'm not
holding against him. I think that will be I personally think that will be the making of him. I mean, if having won four majors already isn't a glittering enough CV, I actually believe that experience will hold him in great stead for the next 10 years.
I think you're right, actually, Richard. Bang on, actually. We're yet to see the best of Roy. I know that's hard to believe because, I mean, but he's still a young bloke. He's still a young bloke, fit as a fiddle. And when it comes down to the best players, the top five in the world, to me, he is streaks ahead, especially when that putter's working. Ain't no one going to touch him.
Well, he was second in Switzerland, but we need the full top 10.
Well,
John,
mate, the top 10 was amazing, wasn't it? I mean, just look at the names here. I mean, people you wouldn't normally get to say in the top 10, but Soderberg, the winner from Sweden, Lorenzo Galli, then you got Rory McIlroy, Andres Romero, and obviously Somoya. And, I mean, the Finn, lovely, lovely play. And then you got Arnhaus, the man Richard's saying is going to be Rookie of the Year, potentially. Mike Lorenzo Vera, who's always got a smile from ear to ear. Lovely bloke, man yet to win on the European Tour. Can't wait to see him. And then Tommy Fleetwood, Lucas Herbert, Wayne Dornsbury and Mateo Schwab.
We haven't really talked about Tommy Fleetwood. He joined, I think he was got to 13 under. He was leading with Wade Ormsby.
I know.
After 9 or 10. And you think he's still got the par fives to come. Yeah. He played brilliantly on the Saturday and the second half of his round. He didn't really put it together early on. And usually Tommy's got one of these rounds or half a round.
Yeah, he does.
Where he just slips away. But I thought he got over that Saturday, got himself in the position Saturday afternoon, and I thought this was his to lose, really, going into the back nine.
I believe
he shoots a 70.
I know he does. I know he shoots a 70, but I tell you what, if that wind got up on final day, you'd have, honestly, I think it would have played straight into Fleetwood's hands. And I honestly think Fleetwood would have come out victorious if the wind was up. But say it was a two-club wind and really difficult, and it was just swirling, especially in amongst all those trees and the mountains as well. I think, yeah, I was quite surprised he shot 70 last round, but, you know.
Yeah, he's on this streak, isn't he, of I don't know how many it is, so many events without missing a cut. I think it's the longest streak that's out there at the moment. But he's saying that I'd like to have missed a couple of cuts and had a few wins in there. And I actually like you, Dan. I actually, you know, watching it yesterday, I thought he was the one that was going to emerge and win. I don't know, just, again, it's such small margins. And I just didn't think he was confident enough with his putting. I don't know if that's a fair point. He just didn't seem to have, just didn't seem to be assured enough on what a tricky greens. And then he had a few, he was unlucky, you know, with the runoff areas. Every time he just caught the slope.
It's fractions, mate, around that golf course. Fractions. The greens are tiny. They slope off. All you got to be is half a yard out. And it makes a world of difference.
It just seemed to happen to him. It seemed to me a bit more than to other players where he just catch the slope by a small margin and just run off into the fringes of the green.
Yeah, I mean, he's got about a 10-year-old putter in his bag that he's just brought out of the old retirement
from
zone.
He bought it from eBay, didn't he?
Yeah, he bought it from eBay, sorry, I'm just thinking it was one he probably in a lucky bag.
The putter cost £90 on eBay.
That's what it would do, isn't it? But, I mean, do you know what? He puts great with it, so it's just one of those off days for him. And there are greens to read up there in the mountain.
Maybe
there
he needs to buy a £200 putter from eBay.
No, I think the night you want to do yourself fine, mate.
Predictions, and one of our number last week did go for Tommy Fleetwood. That was Paul Eales, and Tommy obviously was tied eighth, so that's 5 points. Also, Ealesy went for Sam Horsfield, who showed early on, but eventually finished tied 43rd, so 0 points, so 5 points in total. Kit Alexander, who was alongside us as well, went for Matt Fitzpatrick and Gavin Green. Gavin Green was 12th, 5 points, and Matt Fitzpatrick can turn 25. Looked a bit embarrassed to get a cake on one of the holes, didn't he? Did you see that?
Know.
He was like, oh, my God. What do you mean? He was like, oh, I don't want this. I'm trying to play. Don't give me this cake. Don't give me the knife.
Oh, poor lad. He wanted to be anywhere apart from that.
Let me get on with the
hole. I was surprised, actually. I given, you know, his form, I know you can't do it every time, but he was never in it. I mean, he only just made the cut.
69th for Matt Fitzpatrick in the end. I went for Sergio Garcia and Jos Lauten, who tied for 23rd. The pair, so 0 points for me. A reminder that we get 2 points, one outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race 2 Dubai standings, and one can be from anywhere in the world rankings. And the net result means that the presenters are on 180, co-presenters on 105, and the guests on 85. Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. If you want to get involved, go to the My European Tour section of EuropeanTour.com. Lee Findlay, we mentioned Lee's name every single week. He still leads the global leaderboard. So well done to Lee. Getting towards the business end where plenty of prize money, plenty of points, so it can change. We've got the top 10 in the Race 2 Dubai and the top 10 in the world to portion off. Richard, you've got the details for us.
Okay, let's start with the Race to Dubai then. And Xander Schauffele is at number 10. We'll see him in action this week in Germany. Eric Van Rooyen at 9. Here's a fellow South African, Louis Oosthuizen at 8. Kevin Kisner at 7. Matt Fitzpatrick at 6. Matt Wallace, not the best of weeks for him, at number 5. Tommy Fleetwood now at 4. John Rahm at 3. Bernd Wiesberger at 2. And still on top, the Open champion, Shane Lowry.
What about the top 10 in the world, Richard?
Yeah, so to the world rankings now, and Sebastian Soderberg, after he's been just outside the top 100 now, been a big climb up the rankings for him the last couple of weeks. But to the top 10, and no change, really. Bryson DeChambeau at 10, Xander Schauffele at 9, certain Tiger Woods at 8, Patrick Cantlay at 7, John Rahm at 6, Justin Thomas at 5, Justin Rose at 4, Dustin Johnson at 3, Rory... trying to close in on Brooks Koepka, Rory at 2, Koepka at number 1.
Elsewhere, Dave Whitnell overcame 10 long years as a professional golfer and a two-hole playoff against Laurie Kanter to emerge victorious at the KPMG Trophy at Millennium Golf in Belgium. The Englishman began the final round 3 back of the lead, but birdied half of the Millennium Golf and made only one bogey to card an 8 under par 63 and post the 23 under par target. Playing in the final group, his fellow countryman Kanter eagled the 72nd hole to send the tournament to a playoff, and after both players birdied the first extra hole, they played the 18th once more for a 6th time this week. Whitnell birdied the par 5 and sealed victory when Kanter failed to make an up and down after hitting it through the green in 2.
Yeah, just on that, I mean, great story, Dale Whitnell. I mean, he had no real status on the Challenge Tour, or no full status, so to get a win, I mean, that's life-changing for him. And John, Laurie Kanter, I know you know pretty well. I mean, great to see him showing some form. Apparently the eagle he made it in the 72nd hole.
I've seen it. It was like 45, 50 feet. I might be doing him injustice. Bit of swing, double breaker it looked like as well. And, slots it in, cool as a cucumber, just went and plucked the ball out of the hole and just went nonchalantly down straight to the first playoff hole. Like they said, you know, both birdied the first playoff hole and then, Dale gets it.
Also, congratulations to David Shacklady, who secured his second Stayshore Tour title with a 6-under-par final round of 66 that sealed the outcome of the Sinclair Invitational at Hanbury Manor Marriott Hotel and Country Club. The Englishman carded a bogey-free final round to reach 11-under-par and win on home soil by one shot ahead of Austria's Marcus Breer. How did he get to the senior? So, crikey, I'm getting old.
Marcus Breer.
Yeah. Two shots ahead of close friend Paul Streeter, who finished 3rd on 9-under-par. What was the event that Marcus Breer used to win all the time on the European Tour years ago?
It was
an Austrian one, obviously.
It was
on the spin.
Yeah, he won Austrian Open, yeah. And now, look at, we got Schwab and Wiesberger.
Yeah,
a couple of cracking Austrian players.
Oh, yeah.
Moving on to the next European Tour event, which is the Porsche European Open. Richard McAvoy, the defending champion. We are at Green Eagle Golf Courses outside of Hamburg, an event, John, that you know fairly well. You've been there a few times.
I have now, and it's an absolute beast, guys. It is an absolute beast. And for you boys and girls, if you're heading over there to go and watch it, well, get your hiking boots on, because honestly, the last couple of years I've been there, it's rained cats and dogs, you know, early doors, and the course has played an absolute monster, lifting and placing everywhere on there. And I mean, I was watching Bryson DeChambeau fall apart last year and Richie Mack coming through and winning it. I mean, it was glorious. I think I'd done a little sing-song down the last, actually, and I got told off on the mic.
We know where your loyalties lie, and from a European Tour point of view, why not? Controversial end to that. Bryson DeChambeau didn't really cover himself in glory, did he, on the last hole last year?
He chucked his toys out of the pram.
Bit ridiculous, and Richard McAvoy fully deserved the victory.
After years and years of fighting like a good un, you know, and a proper journeyman. I mean, I was with him when we played for England as well, you know, in the amateur days, seeing him get on the golf course, always fought the left-hand side, likes a big draw like myself, great putter, great chipper, good brain in his box, and, you know, it's nice to see him play and come out victorious. It was brilliant.
Yeah, 285th attempt. He just won on the Challenge Tour the week before. It was incredible because you mentioned DeChambeau is up there, the players that were in the field, but John Allen was second, Christopher Blomstrand was second, Richard Winning, obviously, as well. So some prize names up there. I just wonder whether we'll see a similar thing happened this year, given the calibre of players that are in the field.
There are more Americans. Bryson hasn't come across this time
funny that.
Surprisingly enough. But we have got the likes of Patrick Reed, Xander Schauffele. Is he one of their own? One of Germany's own?
Well, he's part German.
Come on.
You know that?
Who's that? How?
Xander Schauffele.
Is he?
His dad, right?
Sleeves have just been rolled up. Hang on. Yeah. Settle down. No, everyone. Get yourself a coffee. Get the kettle on.
So his mum was born in Taiwan.
Yeah.
So that's one half of Xander. His dad is half French, half German.
Right.
So his dad actually was a decathlete and he was due to be in the Olympics for the German national team to go to the Olympics. It's a horrific story, really. He had a head-on collision with a car crash with a drunk driver. And it meant he got so severely injured, he lost vision in his left eye that he couldn't compete. And, you know, he lost touch with his classmates and he decided to move on to the United States. And as a result of, obviously, he turned to golf and ended up becoming Xander's coach.
Yeah.
And we all know what's happened since. So there is, in fact, Xander's, to go even further back, and honestly, this is true, Xander's great-grandfather played for Stuttgart, top-level European football.
Wow.
Yeah.
Proper. This is a sporting pedigree,
this is,
then.
Yeah. This is a great backstory.
So Xander Schauffele, kind of, I mean, obviously he's not German, but... Yeah, but he's partly German.
So at one stage, could he have played for us on the Ryder Cup team? Or because he's now played for the States,
that's it. Of course, if his dad's half French and half German, his mum's Taiwanese, he could have played.
I'd have him.
He could have been the sort of Alan Lamb of the current era.
Well, he could have, in the same way, like the Solheim Cup's coming up, the Corda sisters could have been playing for Europe instead of playing for the United States of America, because, of course, their dad was Czech.
Oh, he's obviously got a massive chance of winning this week, you know, because his ability is fantastic. He's had a very good season. He won... in Hawaii. Did he win after that? I don't think he did he? Or did he pick up another PGA Tour event? I know he won Hawaii because he beat Gary Woodland. I think he shot a course record. Final round came from way off the pace.
Wow.
To win. Schauffele's playing. Reed's playing. Matt Kuchar's playing. Do you think he's taking a local caddy this week? Good to see him play.
It's funny you should say that because, I just mentioned the Solheim Cup coming up, but Florentina Parker, who played in the last Solheim Cup, she's from Hamburg, knows the course really well. And if there's any European Tour players listening to this, she's been offering her services as a caddy for the event coming up. Yeah,
so I'd have taken that. Definitely.
Matt Kuchar might be on the phone.
If you're listening, Matt, you know, but do the right thing.
To be negotiated, yeah. Can I pick up on one other player who's playing in the field this week? I don't know if you've picked...
As many as you want.
Michael Campbell.
Oh my goodness.
Michael Campbell is playing his first European Tour event since Abu Dhabi, January 2014.
Crikey.
Yeah, and he's come straight from America, finished top 15 on the Champions Tour at the weekend. He finished second a few weeks back at the...
I want to say he's got a win in Germany on his CV, but I'm not quite sure.
Oh, I think he has, yeah. I think he has.
He lives a lot and coaches a lot down in Spain, doesn't he?
That's
now?
Right,
and
yeah.
It's, do you know what? He's been building up to... You know, being a senior now and playing a lot more. And by all accounts, he's as fit as a fiddle and absolutely playing brilliant golf. So don't be surprised if he's there or thereabouts as well, especially with the experience he holds.
Yeah, so that's just an interesting name that I saw on the list there.
Yeah, good
show. He's actually
teeing up. Throw one or two more at you. Paul Casey.
Top 10 last year at this event, Paul Casey. Been in terrific form.
He won again on the PGA Tour earlier this season.
And also, he was one of, I think he was had the third best score, didn't he, at Eastlake a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, he was third in the Tour Championship. He won the Valspar back in March. He's had a good season.
Mate, he rips it. Paul Casey is...
Does he get the credit he deserves from the European?
I don't think he does, but then, do you know what? He set up camp in America and loved it when he was there at uni and stuff like that, and that's where he wanted to be, you know... Family or whatever it was, his reasons, you know, and I think job-wise, anyway, you know, his quality of life, maybe just being over there, you know, travelling, you know, within one country made it a little bit easier for him. And, you know, it is a PGA Tour, great golf courses, but, you know, I mean, what a player. Hasn't fulfilled his potential, like you say.
And when we look at the European Tour players who are teeing up this week, yes, we've got the likes of Thomas Peters, who's probably more than just a regular European Tour player. But when you consider the likes of Lukas Bjerregaard playing this week, we've got the likes of Bernd Wiesberger, who's really bounced back to form after injury this week to test himself, the likes of Ross Fischer, Robert McIntyre, we mentioned earlier. You know, these are players that are going to welcome the fact that there's a very strong American contingent coming over to test themselves against. It's more than just a regular European Tour event, this, isn't it?
Yeah, it gives them a chance to... It focuses the mind, a chance to maybe raise their game. You know, if you give it like a football analogy, you know, when you're playing a Premier League team and you have ambitions to be a Premier League team yourself, it's a chance to prove yourself and to show what you can do. You know, there's so much talent out there. I know we discussed before we start recording who we're going to choose for the week in terms of... I've actually changed my mind from what I...
I've been thinking about really, that, but that
you can change your mind.
Well, because we haven't officially said it on
no,
air.
No, we haven't, so, no. So. I mean, any other the Europeans that we want to mention, we've got Guido Migliozzi, who's won twice this year on the European Tour. He's been a real breakout player that many wouldn't have heard about, certainly this time last year. Kurt Kitayama is a winner on the European Tour. There's some very, very good players teeing up this week.
See, I like Kurt.
Well, Ryan Fox, I mean, you think?
Ryan Fox.
Of course, that would suit him.
Oh, my goodness. Does it not suit
Julian
him?
Surrey?
I mean, my goodness, Julian Surrey. I mean, what a player. I like seeing Yorgi Campiers win in Morocco this year. The guy's just, I must admit, for consistency levels, he's massive. And if there was ever a player on that list I'm looking at now that's more like Richie Mack from last year, it's more like Jorge Campillo. I mean, great short game, really straight off the tee, keeps the ball in play. Wouldn't be surprised if he's there or thereabouts come the end of the day.
All right, then, predictions. As we mentioned earlier, two picks we get. One of them has to be outside of the Race to Dubai top 50 from last year. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. So you boys reckon that you've changed your mind from our
pre-pod
chat. All right, John, who are you going for?
Well, outside the top 50, it has got to be Bernd Wiesberger.
That's a bit of a cheat, really, isn't it?
Well, it ain't.
Because he was only outside the top 50 because he didn't play.
It's true, he's sticking by the rules.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Those are the rules. Those are the rules.
Okay.
Hang on, let me just write this down because I'm sure you said someone else earlier. No, you didn't. Wiesberger and Schauffele for your good self. Oh, sorry, I've just let the cat out of the bag. Who's your second pick?
Oh, funny enough, I think I'll go for the half this and half that of Xander Schauffele. Thank you very much.
No, because I've changed my mind. Because I would like to have gone for Xander Schauffele, obviously.
Why wouldn't you?
Is he the best player in the field? Is that what we're saying?
Me personally, yes.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Reed did win a couple of weeks ago on the PGA Tour. Xander came close, obviously, pipped by Rory McIlroy a couple of weeks ago as well. But yeah, I think Xander is the best player in the
field.
He's
solid.
But I will go for two players, because it's a very long course. It's almost 7,600 yards. So I was going to pick Lucas Herbert, but then I remembered something that I thought prior to coming here today, that I think it's time for, you mentioned Bernd Wiesberger, I think it's time for the other Austrian to break through. So I'm going to go
Matthias
Schwab. What is it? Because I heard in commentary, everyone's saying Schwab.
Got to be but Schwab.
I mean, we don't say Bernd Wiesberger, do we? No. And they're from the same place. It's got to be Matthias Schwab, hasn't it? I don't know. I'd have to ask Matthias how he likes to have his name said, but I've heard Schwab said a lot, but Matthias Schwab, call
Silent
him whatever
assassin.
You like.
Okay. Silent assassin. Yeah.
I won't snooker your second pick then.
So, yeah.
Like I did with John.
Well, yeah, the second pick, I'm not sure, because I was thinking after last week, Lucas Herbert finished brilliantly well, 66. So I could go for him as...
See, the pressure's off him now, see, because he feels like he's going to keep his card. So that might be a good pick.
So, yeah, I was going to go Kuchar. So why don't I go for two seemingly outsiders?
Come on. It's
fine,
put
my neck on the block and go
exactly.
Lucas Herbert. And now, listen, because I don't know if you hear the commentary on the TV, Alison Whittaker, who does a lot of the commentary. So she, I don't know what she's promised Lucas as an incentive this week, but she said to him on Sunday morning, I'll cook you a three-course dinner with matching wines if you shoot 6 under on Sunday. He shoots 6 under on Sunday. Now, Alison, I'm going to have a word with her now after picking him. Got to give him four three-course dinners for the next few weeks coming up as an incentive to shoot 466s at Green Eagle at the Porsche European Open. That way, it could be number one.
Okay. Well, you have pushed the boat with those two. I'm not, because I'm going to go with Paul Casey, third in the Tour Championship. And Patrick Reed, who was winner of the Northern Trust, who I was ridiculed for tipping for the Open this year by the guests at the time, even though he did finish top 10. I mean, he snuck into the top 10. Everyone was getting closer and closer to the top 10 on the final day. But he had a poor start to the season, didn't he, Patrick Reed? He was shooting it all over the place off the back of an awful Ryder Cup. But I think he's been one of the better players on the PGA Tour over the last 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, he's made some changes, hasn't he? Coach-wise...
Has he rededicated himself a little
bit? Well, I think it's a case of confidence, isn't it? You know, you win for the first time in 16 months, used to being a major, being a major champion. We mentioned Michael Campbell, and he never really did cope with the fact that he climbed the summit and didn't know where to go. And I think for players, it takes a little while to work it out. Patrick Reed's still only, 29? And I think he's learned to deal with that mantle of being a Masters champion, a major champion. And I think that win that he had a few weeks ago on the PGA Tour, I think that pretty much has given him a new injection of life. And, I expect him to become, what was he predicting, to be that top player?
That's what you said. I've watched him the last couple of years around Eagle Tree, and do you know what? He's not come up trumps. He's not had his game with him when I've been there. Yeah. So,
thanks for that.
Yeah, just to put you down, mate, all right?
Yes, because sometimes courses, you know, don't fit
mate,
the
well,
eye.
Jack Nicklaus said, I'd do well if I finished second or third here this week. You know, he knew major venues and certain venues that didn't suit his eye, and that might be one of them for Patrick Reed.
Well, I wish your selections well also.
Thanks, mate. Love you too.
That is your lot for today. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Next time, we will review the Porsche European Open and look ahead to the KLM Open as well. But for now, from Richard Kaufman.
Yeah, bye-bye, everyone.
From Johnny Morgan.
Goodbye, everybody.
Enjoyed your company. From me, Dan Roebuck. It is goodbye. We'll speak soon.